Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
Company.
It's 7:07 here. It's a busy morning on O'Connor and Company as we are going to be visited by multiple candidates for Virginia 10 today and tomorrow. By the way, that primary coming up this Saturday. Coming up in just 10 minutes, we'll speak with the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin. It's 7:35. We're going to check in with ABC 7 reporter Tom Russi as there's still huge problems with leadership in Metro. Coming up also in 8:35, Kash Patel is going to join us latest on the Durham trial. Bethany Mandel is with us all morning. Aren't you excited?
I'm so excited. I'm not even kidding. I love it here.
I led the witness there with my aren't you excited question. What are you supposed to say?
Do you think I'm here for fun at 5 a.m.?
That's true. Fair enough. Joining us right now, he's here for fun. He's always a blast. He's Dave Bossy. He's the president, of course, of Citizens United and knows quite a bit about the political world. Dave, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Great to be with you guys. Actually, I'm a huge fan of your co-host this morning, Larry. I'm a huge fan of yours too, Larry. I'm a huge fan of hers.
You're right to lead with being a fan of Bethany.
You can text me any softball questions that you want from now until eternity, and you've just won me over. Very easy.
Dave,
well,
I'll let that statement just stand.
Yeah, so exactly. Hard. I'm so proud of you, Larry.
Dave, your analysis of, is it right to boil down the results we're seeing from yesterday's primaries as, you know, Trump endorsements winning versus Trump endorsements not winning? Is it that simple?
Well, it's never that simple, one way or the other, Larry. Trump's in Pennsylvania is an example. Every one of those candidates wanted Trump's endorsement. Every one of those candidates ran on an America First policy agenda, if you will. And every one of those candidates was trying to outdo the other as being closest to Trump. So every vote came out was really a Trump vote. And if you look at the totals in Pennsylvania last night, at least when I went to bed at about 1 a.m., the numbers were staggering. Republicans outpolled Democrats statewide on these races, which means excitement is on our side. When we coalesce around either Oz or McCormick, whoever ends up winning, and by the way, I mean, in the middle of the night, Oz overtook McCormick and now has about a 2,600 vote lead. And I think that is going to try to stand the test against the mail-in ballots that'll come in today.
So do you think that there's any irony that the mail-in ballots might deliver this for us?
Thick. Oh, boy, that's thick irony. It's pretty amazing. We're going to see just how good Pennsylvania is and what they've learned, if anything. Now, the good news is Republicans tend to play by the rules, and Republican primary voters and campaigns also do the same. So I hope that we will find very little shenanigans that have gone on, and that they'll get these counted and get this election result solidified. I will tell you, one of the biggest races of the night, nobody's focused on yet this early, is the Idaho Attorney General's race, where a 28-year incumbent Republican rhino, somebody who has been part of the establishment swamp for the last 28 years, I believe it was six terms, was defeated by America First candidate Raul Labrador, former member of Congress.
Oh, yeah.
Former leader of the Freedom Caucus, one of the original guys in the Freedom Caucus. These people, are getting elected around the country and nobody's paying attention. Wow. So I think the attorney general's races are very important when it comes to a lot of suing the Biden administration on environment, whatever the regulatory schemes are, so important. And so to have Raul Labrador there is exciting.
Oh, yeah. We've seen that play out with our former attorney general in Virginia, Mark Herring, and now replaced by Mieres. And certainly Mr. Frosch in Maryland has wasted many of the Maryland taxpayers' dollars with frivolous lawsuits. So that's great news. By the way, now we're going to have to readjust our rundown. We were going to do our entire 8 o'clock hour dedicated to the attorney general's race in Idaho. Bossy, so thanks for messing that up.
Hey, that's called making news.
Let's bring it closer to home, though. The new congressional map in Maryland is an intriguing one, I think, this election cycle. Andy Harris, who's solid in Maryland, won. The day after this new map was instituted, he said, listen, we're going to win one. I think we have a great chance in six. And then he specifically said districts 3 and 2, that would be Anne Arundel County up into Baltimore and then north of Baltimore, are very much in for the taking for Republicans. And you're focusing on one race in particular, Maryland 2.
Well, absolutely. I focus on, on all of them. I'm the RNC National Committeeman in Maryland, and so we focus on all of these races. And I will tell you, there are generic ballots out there, meaning a generic Republican versus generic Democrat, no names attached. And that is kind of the historical way we look at districts, whether they're winnable or not. And in this year, let me say in 2020, the generic ballot was a D+4 on election day, and the Republicans won 14 seats. The Democrats always historically have an advantage in the generic ballot. We right now are seeing R+6, R+8 on the generic ballot, which means that a Democrat seat where they have voter registration +7 or +9, anything in single digits, which is what the second district in Maryland, the new second, has a D+7, and the third has a D+9. We have great candidates there. I urge everybody to go look at Nicole Ambrose, who is my counterpart, the national committee woman here in Maryland, a tremendous America First fight champion, somebody who's been working so hard for the Republican Party and the Republican cause, and is going to go to Washington to stop Joe Biden's radical socialist agenda. So those are seats that, Larry, we can now win and in a wave year. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a wave year. And just to put it in perspective, we won 54 seats in 94, and we won 64 seats in 2010, or 63 seats in 2010 in wave years. And we didn't think we would win that many, but we did. This year, it could be even bigger.
Absolutely. Something that I really liked about Ambrose was that she's the personification of everything that the left sort of says that we're fighting against. She's a single mom living in Baltimore. Like,
right.
She is really, truly, their narrative doesn't hold. We're anti-woman and all these things when you have a single mom running on the Republican ticket.
She's dangerous. She's a single mom raising her two kids, a Johns Hopkins education, who's a fierce advocate for our Republican priorities, and somebody who's not going to just sleepwalk through this campaign. She's going to be out there. She is one of the most active Republicans in the state, which is why we're so excited that she decided to put her name in the hat, because no one is going to outwork Nicole Ambrose.
Well, Dutch Ruppersberger, who is currently a congressman from Maryland 2nd, does he even live in the new district now that the map has been redrawn? Honestly, I know Sarbanes doesn't live in the 3rd.
He needs to get an apartment, obviously.
Or just a chair, as some people do. They just rent a chair in their district. Look, I don't know if Dutch is up for this fight. He's going to have to think about early retirement here.
Yeah.
This is going to be a tough year. Maryland 20 years ago, Larry, Maryland had 4 Republican members of Congress and 4 Democrats. Okay, it was a split up evenly before O'Malley redid the maps and gerrymandered all of these. We're getting back to the point where we could have equal representation. 4 Republicans and 4 Democrats. It would, and think about that. If we're picking up 1 or 2 seats in Maryland, let alone 3, it's a wave across this country like people have never seen.
Oh, that's a game changer. Absolutely. And it's exciting that Maryland's even in play, this many districts in play. Dave Bossy, we'll be talking to you plenty between now and Election Day. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glenn Youngkin coming up next, first at 7:15. Joining us now is the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. He is one, Glenn Youngkin. Mr. Governor, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Great to be with you. I hope you're well.
Well, I am. Thank you. And I got to say, you know, listen, you've already done quite a bit since you were inaugurated in mid-January, but you did inherit, sadly, a circumstance in Virginia that we haven't seen in decades, and that is this rising violent crime problem, especially in Richmond and in the areas of Northern Virginia around the District of Columbia. I understand you're actually trying to tackle this head on.
Yeah, Larry, we are. We have clearly seen a crime crisis in Virginia. The murder rate continues to escalate. We're at a 20-year high. And in all candor, it's been absolutely the progressive policies of the last 2 years that have gotten us here. And so we put together a crime task force. We're meeting with leading officials from cities all over Virginia, mayors, police chiefs, sheriffs. And the most important thing we're doing is bringing together local resources, state resources, and federal resources to get at violent crime. Of course, what we know is that Commonwealth's attorneys in a lot of these cities aren't prosecuting, but the one thing they can't hide is this awful increase in murder rate and gun violence. And we are driving to arrest people, prosecute people, put them in jail, and keep them there.
So, Governor Youngkin, I think that that's great, and I think that that's really important. But something that I've observed sort of locally to me in Maryland, you know, right over the river, is that a lot of this crime is being perpetrated by kids that should have been in school for the last 2 years. And they're sort of, they spiraled out of control. And there's so many mental health problems. There's so much intertwined in the COVID closures with all of the violent crime that we're now seeing in Maryland, where I live, and presumably in Virginia as well. Is there any component to sort of how you're addressing this that addresses the fact that, you know, a lot of these crimes are being perpetrated by 16, 17, 18 year old young men who have been done a disservice by our government?
Yeah, it's a tragedy. The extended and unnecessary closure of our schools last year was seen to not only cause this tremendous learning loss, but it is directly correlated to young crime. And we've been working with our Department of Juvenile Justice in order to change processing so that if you are a student and you bring a gun to school, you're not going to be released. You're going to see a judge. And we're going to make sure we step in front of this trend. Because what we see, again, is lack of prosecution and lack of accountability with juvenile crime as well. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have got tremendous work to do in our education system to make sure our schools are open, to make sure that there's a pathway to success, that folks can actually learn how to do life, not just get ready to this forced path of go to college if they choose not to and create some hope for kids that otherwise don't have it. But we also have to enforce the laws. And the combination of creating positive pathways in education and enforcing our laws and holding people accountable has to be the answer here. This violent crime task force has been going for about a month. Mm-hmm. We've had meetings across the Commonwealth. What we're hearing over and over again is mayors and city leadership are at a loss. Their resources are down. We must get a budget out of the Senate. And I, again, am so frustrated with our Democrat Senate leadership who are holding up budgets that include funding for pay increases for police, funding for training and equipment, funding for community programs. We must get moving. Virginians are suffering as a result. And by the way, there's no time to dilly around any longer.
Governor Youngkin, we had Attorney General Meares on last week to talk about these protests, these illegal protests in front of Supreme Court justices' homes disrupting the peace. He lamented the fact that the Commonwealth's attorney in Fairfax would not enforce the law, that he had no jurisdiction because of the problem with that Commonwealth's attorney. I know that there's a similar problem in Loudoun County with that Commonwealth's attorney. How are you going to implement your violent crime task force when you can't even get the Commonwealth's attorneys to cooperate with you on these illegal protests going on?
Well, eventually I'm going to authorize Attorney General Meares to prosecute if the Commonwealth's attorneys won't. And oh, by the way, with regards to these protests, this isn't limited to the Commonwealth's attorneys in Virginia. This is the Attorney General of the United States who won't enforce the law. I mean, there is a clear statute on the books the federal law that says you cannot parade or picket in front of a judge's house in order to try to influence them. And that's why Governor Hogan and I have called on Attorney General Garland to enforce the law. It is clear. It's punishable with up to a year in prison. And there is just absolutely no excuse for what is happening in front of justices' houses. We, in fact, have the state police ready and standing by to make sure that we don't have any escalation along with Fairfax County Police. But at the end of the day, this is about enforcing the laws. And the Violent Crime Task Force will, in fact, work to arrest people. We will get them prosecuted. We will put them in jail. And we continue to ask for folks to enforce the laws on the books.
Well, with these jurisdictional problems, there are some limits to what you can do. But you're unlimited in your ability to officially make me the ambassador to Virginia's wine country, Governor. I've been waiting almost 6 months now. This is direct payback for my ability to get you elected in the first place. You wouldn't have done it without me. And let's just cut to the chase. Am I officially your ambassador?
Larry, unfortunately, there's been one other applicant for the job. And it's the first lady. And so I'm weighing the credentials between the two of you. But right now, I got to be honest, the jury is out and I'm going to have to spend some time thinking about this.
You are
incredibly qualified, but she has put her application in for the job.
With all due respect, I think it's early in your term to have a nepotism scandal going on, Governor Youngkin. And I'm going to lead the charge on this.
No, I mean, I think he's being pragmatic here. If you look at the picture that you want on all of those advertisements.
I guess that's fair. No, you got me on that. Yeah. All right. I'm willing to share it. I mean, we can go wine tasting together.
I actually believe that may be a very, very practical solution, Larry.
I will address it next time. Thank you, though, for taking up this violent crime task force here in Virginia. I know that people are struggling right now in all seriousness, and I appreciate you addressing it head on. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you for having me this morning. We are going to work every morning to make Virginia safe, and we know that we've got just a terrible increase in violent crime, and we're going to go to work and address it immediately.
That's Governor Glenn Youngkin there, Virginians. Be proud. Thanks for joining us, sir. It's 7:24.
Now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
It's 7:37 on a very busy morning here. Of course, we're giving you the results and analysis of yesterday's big primaries. They're still counting the ballots in Pennsylvania. We'll see how that develops. Also coming up at 8:05, Dana Kennedy in the New York Post covering the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. Big day yesterday. 8:35, Kash Patel will give us his take on the John Durham investigation. Also, we're going to speak with several candidates running for Virginia's 10th congressional district, including Caleb Max and Hung Cao. And also, Bethany Mandel is here all morning. Thanks for coming along for the ride here. It's been a bit of a roller coaster.
I'm having a lot of fun. I cannot believe the packed schedule that we're having. And yet, you're still able to make jokes about, you know, all of these inappropriate things. It really speaks to your flexibility.
You know, it's God's gift. It really
is. That's why you're made for radio.
Who am I to argue with it? Well, there's no joke involved with the absolute collapse of the D.C. metro system. Sadly, this is a tale that has been told over and over and over again. Tom Rousey is a reporter for ABC 7, WJLA, our friends over there, and he's been covering this. And Tom, I guess we shouldn't be surprised that Metro is in complete freefall again, but I guess we had such high hopes for Paul Wiedefeld, and now his retirement is going to be effective immediately. He's sort of leaving in disgrace. How did this collapse for Paul Wiedefeld so quickly?
It's kind of unbelievable because for the vast majority of his 6.5 years, Larry, at Metro, he was very highly regarded. And even when he would do things that would inconvenience riders, like shut down the system for months in some cases, he generally had a lot of support, not just among the local leadership, but among riders, because riders who had ridden before Paul Wiedefeld knew how bad things had gotten. So they kind of gave him a lot of leeway. And he did definitely accomplish some things as far as, you know, I don't know if you remember, but about the time he took over, there was track fires all the time, major delays. So he really set about to fixing that. And honestly, he was very, very highly regarded. But I think things started to go south in October when there was a derailment of a train. And the derailment was one thing, but it was one of the 7000 series trains, which is their newest trains. And when it derailed, it exposed that the wheels had a major safety issue where they were starting to come apart, like move apart as the trains would be in operation. and it would get to the point of being dangerous. And to this day, they don't know the exact reason that's happening. They know it's complicated, but they don't know the exact reason. So that's when it started to fall apart. But then other things happened, and kind of this week, the straw that broke the camel's back, it feels like, was on Sunday when it came out that, you know, Metro has to – they require their rail operators to get what's called recertification. And it involves training in the field. It involves classroom instruction on safety. And they're supposed to be scheduled to do it. So their management is supposed to say, okay, your recertification is on such and such a day. Turns out 250 roughly out of 500 train operators were behind on recertification. And it wasn't the operator's fault. It was Metro's fault for not scheduling them. And they had, during the pandemic, they had said, okay, you can delay it a little, but nobody was checking to make sure that they actually did it. And so as a result, even though they're supposed to do it every 2 years, 72 of them were actually more than a year behind on their recertification. And that seemed to be the last straw. And the next day, he announced he was supposed to retire at the end of June. He announced he was going to retire effective immediately. And the Metro Board of Directors accepted it. Mm.
So rewinding a little bit back to the 7,000 series trains, I don't ride the, I actually haven't ridden Metro in probably a decade.
Wow.
Your husband rides every day, almost every day. And so, but he takes the red line. And so he said that, you know, after they took those trains off the sort of circulation, it didn't really impact him because they're sort of giving the best service to the red line. But what is, I love your opinion if you think that's true, but also sort of, is the impact on rider experience sort of impacting his decision to leave also? Because, you know, we've been running on like what percentage fewer trains for the last how many months?
Mm. Yeah, but Bethany, it's unreal because they had 748 rail cars of the 7,000 series. Currently, none of them are running still.
Yeah.
They came
back.
They
just disappeared.
Yeah, they came back briefly, but then there was a whole other debacle, and this Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission that oversees Metro saw Metro was doing some things they felt were unsafe, and so they ordered them off the tracks again. But yeah, the service for it really depends on where you ride, but for many riders, it's been really slow service now for more than 7 months, and the folks who really are affected. Green and yellow line, blue, orange, silver line, they're affected the most. And especially if you have to take one line, like I have to take the orange, I have to take the silver, you can be waiting at times up to 20 minutes for a train or more if they're running a little behind. So at the red line, they have done better. The reason for that is the red line is the only line that never shares tracks with another line. So if you're taking the red line, you do have to take the red line. So that's why they offer a little more service there, but even the red line's slower than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And just for a lot of riders, the worst thing in the world is if you have to transfer and you just miss your train after the transfer, like,
and then you got 20 minutes. Yeah. And then you got 20 minutes for the next one. If you're lucky.
And they had just improved green and yellow this week, or 2 weeks ago, to 15 minutes instead of 20, which still is not great. And then it went back to 20 this week because of this whole thing with the train operators not getting recertified because they had to send a bunch to get recertified.
Tom, we only have less than a minute here, but I'm getting the sense everyone had such high hopes for Paul Wiedefeld. They thought he was going to make a difference. We seem like we're right back where we started before he came in. Now, is this just Band-Aids on a gaping wound? I mean, do we need somebody to just come in and sort of turn the whole thing inside out and reimagine the Metro system in D.C.?
Well, I was talking to a state senator from Maryland yesterday, Mark Corman, and he said it is time to rethink the way we run Metro because no other transit system is set up like Metro. And it's basically, it's a power sharing thing. The federal government, state government, local governments all share power. And his quote was, you know, when everybody's in charge, nobody's in charge. So if this was just a city transit system, somebody could come in, clean house, you know, change it, at least in theory. But here, like, say, Maryland is like, I'm fed up with this. I want to change it. Well, they got to get permission from a ton of other entities to be able to do that.
See, this is what I've always been saying. See, when you live in New York and the subways are a failure, the mayor takes the hit.
Yeah.
There's accountability there, and the mayor, it's a vested interest for the mayor of New York to make sure the trains run on time. Here, everyone points their finger. There's no single entity, whether it's the federal government, Virginia, Maryland, D.C., they can all point their fingers, oh, it wasn't me, it wasn't me, and so no one loses their job.
Yeah.
Sadly, when it's political, unless you're going to lose an election, you're not going to do a good job, in my opinion. I won't drag you into that. You're not in the opinion business. You're in a great reporting business, Tom Rousey, and you do a great job. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Oh, Larry, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And you are a roundup of the candidates looking to get the Republican nomination in the 10th Congressional District of Virginia. The primary is this Saturday, Bethany. And our next guest, Caleb Max, well, he wants to keep it in the family, as it were. He is the grandson of the longtime congressman from Virginia 10, Frank Wolf. Caleb Max, thanks for joining us again. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me on, Larry. I really appreciate it.
You bet. It's maxforvirginia.com. And, of course, I know you don't want to just be known as Frank Wolf's grandson, but that's not a bad thing to be, frankly. Talk to me about what you bring to the table here and why you are the candidate of choice.
Sure. Yeah, no, you had Cal Thomas on at the beginning of the show, and I just read his book very recently, America's Expiration Date, which if anyone hasn't read it, I highly recommend it. And he talks about when you look at the course history of the last 2,000 years and great nations on earth, whether it was the British Empire, the Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, the Spanish Empire, the average age that they last before they collapse is about 250 years. And he says the three reasons they fail oftentimes is one, they get militarily overextended, they fight wars on too many fronts. Secondly, that there's a significant moral decline in the communities and the communities start falling apart. And then lastly, if there's an oversized public debt, specifically where the interest on that debt is more than that country or that nation takes in every year. And when you look at our country today, we see all of those things, whether it's the botched pullout in the Middle East, where in Afghanistan, we're probably going to have to get reinvolved in the Middle East in the future, whether it's what's happening in Ukraine, whether it's China moving on Taiwan and how aggressive they are. And then secondly, the moral decline, whether it's been in our schools and indoctrination of our children, whether it's our attack on religious freedom, shutting down the churches and forcing vaccine mandates. Democrats have led with these policies to significant moral decline and a falling apart of our communities. And we heard Governor Youngkin on this morning talking about the significant rise in crime, even up here in Northern Virginia. And then lastly, the public debt. We've got $30 trillion in national debt. By 2030, Forbes magazine estimates that it'll be almost $80 trillion if we stay on the spending track that we're on. And so if you boil those three things in, the number one question you get asked when you run for Congress is, why are you doing it? And no, my granddad did not force me to do it or anything like that. I'm very proud of him. But if you look at where our country is, those three things, our 250-year anniversary in this country is July 4th, 2026. And we see all three of these things. And so if we don't make a significant course switch soon, I really fear what the future of this country will be.
Thanks. So when I interviewed for my first job, what actually got me my first job wasn't talking about my experience in college, what I had studied. It was actually talking about my waitressing experience. And something that sort of popped out at me about your biography is that when you were 17 years old, you started a landscaping company, cutting your neighbor's lawn since you were 13 years old. And now, you've grown this business. You have 6 crews, 15 employees, 500 property call list. Tell me how that experience makes you qualified for Congress, because I think it absolutely does.
Sure. So, yeah, I really started the business when I was 12 or 13 years old, mowing my neighbor's lawns. And then I say I started at 17 because that's when I actually got insurance and incorporated and all that sort of thing. And over the course of time, I grew, up to, at one point, we actually had as many as 30 full-time employees, over $1 million in annual sales. I also owned a restaurant for a little bit. These blue-collar jobs, I still went to college, went to George Mason, but a lot of my friends that, are diesel mechanics and electricians and plumbers or own landscape companies, they've got nicer houses, nicer cars, savings accounts. They go on nice trips, more so than all my friends who went to Harvard or Yale or have big degrees and everything else. I mean, these service industry related jobs like the landscape industry, which I was in, it's not always necessarily the sexiest thing, but it's something that everybody needs. And right now, I mean, our small businesses, especially even out here in the 10th district, they're still really struggling with labor issues, the gas prices. I had to raise all the prices on my lawns almost 40% simply because the gas increase literally cut away my entire margin. If I had kept the same prices I had last year, I would be losing money every single time my crews roll out of my lot. And so this is really a problem that a lot of business owners face. And frankly, actually, even this congressional race, other than one lady, I'm the only business owner in the race that actually started his business and continues to run it. So that experience is important for Washington.
Well, and understanding how homeowners are going to have to pay more for their landscaping because of high gas prices, frankly, Caleb Max puts you ahead of Jennifer Wexton in understanding how this economy works. So I commend you for that. We got to leave it there. It is maxforvirginia.com. Choose wisely this Saturday, Virginians. It's your primary coming up, and we're just watching it happen. Caleb Max, good luck with the election.
Thank you. God bless you. 9 to 4 this Saturday. We'd be honored to see y'all out there. Thanks for having me on.
7:54.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.